Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of NationalReview.com. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And Jim, some good news that has nothing to do with back and forth, jockeying, anything to do with the debt ceiling. So that's the last time, well, at least for a moment, that we'll talk about that. And on to today's good news, and that's that despite the fact that President Obama is admittedly outpacing all Republican rivals and probably the Republican field combined at this point, he's still, according to what you've posted early on Wednesday morning here, he's behind the pace that he needs to be at in order to get A, to his 2008 levels, and B, to the vaunted billion-dollar level that everyone's basically assumed that he's going to get to. So obviously a lot of time left, but so far not exactly the enthusiasm on a number of levels that the guy had 4 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the short version is that the past month, Washington has been consumed by the debt ceiling fight, and the good folks at the Obama administration, and feel free to see air quotes as you hear those words, is they recognize that the president should not be doing a busy fundraising schedule while he's talking about the country being on the verge of economic debt Armageddon. So, you know, they put this on the back burner, and Obama stopped going to his multiple fundraisers per week. And I believe the total for Obama and Biden was 10 events. And, you know, all in all, that's nothing huge, but they're saying it's going to cost them tens of billions of dollars. And they're saying that next quarter's fundraising will be tens of billion less, that they don't think that they can, you know, make it up by doubling up in the coming weeks or anything like that. Does this mean that Obama is doomed? No, no, he's going to do quite fine. But it was kind of interesting to put this out there and observe that, I believe it was Alexa Shrugged, one of my favorite folks on Twitter, saw this news and said, victory! a good side effect that Obama had to spend a little less time fundraising and actually being president. And the other thing I kind of noted was that, look, while he spent this month actually governing or actually doing the types of things a president's supposed to do, we complain about him spending that much time fundraising, but he has lost, in the neighborhood of, 4 or 5 points in his approval rating in the past month, including that awful 40% approval, 50% disapproval we saw in Gallup at the end of last week. So not surprising Obama wants to go back to the fundraising trail as quickly as possible, because it seems like this is how the American people are most comfortable with him doing this. They much better than having him actually governing or attempting to make decisions or stuff like that.
So, that's the one thing he knows how to do, I think.
It's really his bread and butter, so to speak.
Exactly right. And of course, I'm sure on all of these makeup fundraising trips, as many as he can squeeze into his schedule, I'm sure he'll also squeeze in one town hall, so we have to pay for the whole operation, which is always a nice touch for a country who's teetering on the edge of bankruptcy, or at least not, right, I guess, for another 2 years.
Yeah, this presumes you can tell the difference between an Obama town hall and a Democratic fundraiser. The rhetoric is the same.
Speaking of similar rhetoric, the president, if you've been paying any attention over the last several weeks, has used several tired and repeated phrases, including those who deserve to have their taxes radically increased, mainly oil companies, large corporations, the rich, millionaires and billionaires, corporate jet owners, of course. And you'd think, you know, Jim, when finally the dust is settled on at least the first major phase of this debt agreement, we still have the super congressional committee to go, but the president would at least change the rhetoric a little bit.
And since you can't close the deficit with just spending cuts, we'll need a balanced approach. It also means reforming our tax code so that the wealthiest Americans and biggest corporations pay their fair share. Voters may have chosen divided government, but they sure didn't vote for dysfunctional government.
So, Jim, he's still talking about how we have divided government, not dysfunctional government, or at least we should, and how we need to raise taxes. Revenues has to be part of it. Half of me wonders whether he doesn't just realize that this phase of the debate is over, or whether he knows something that we don't know about how this is going to get shoehorned into this super committee sometime down the road here in the fall.
First of all, Greg, I prefer to use the term Der Uber Committee. which I'll be spelling with the letter K later on today. The other is, are you absolutely certain that clip is from yesterday?
Because
the rhetoric could be from any other point during the Obama presidency. That could be from 2009, for all we know, really, just shortly after taking office. So there's a couple things that kind of jump out. Once again, I can find good signs to our bad martini and bad signs in our good martini. On this one, you're kind of interesting that there wasn't more gloating in this one. And I think a lot of people said, look, if you want to see whether the debate really was a win for Republicans, if Obama has nothing he can brag about other than we averted disaster, then actually he really, if he'd gotten tax hikes, we'd be hearing a lot about the tax hikes. If he'd gotten a symbolic smashing of an ATM with a sledgehammer or something, or the you know, shooting a corporate jet out of the sky. He would have been bragging about that, but he didn't, because he suggests that really in the end he got almost nothing he wanted in these negotiations. So in that sense, the Republicans feel pretty good. On the other hand, we're just going to be hearing the same message every day from now until 2012. It looks like class warfare and the demonizing the rich and is all he's got. And what's kind of fascinating is that this is now two really big negotiations, brinksmanship. You think back to the budget fight of last year, the decision to extend the Bush tax cuts, and now this one. Time and time again, Obama has given in on the issue of raising taxes on, you know, be it the richest 1%, the richest 2%, people making more than $250,000, et cetera, et cetera. Kind of fascinating that he keeps losing this fight. So on the one hand, Republicans keep saving him from being a president who has to run for re-election having raised taxes in a recession. on the other hand, it kind of shows this is everything we need to know about Obama. More than anything else, his number one policy goal in the whole wide world is to raise taxes.
That's exactly right. And the thing that I find fascinating is if, in fact, somehow Republicans do stand strong later this year and the tax hikes don't materialize and we may end up with, you know, the mandatory trigger cuts and so forth because there's no agreement, I wonder how much Obama will run next year on the fact that he did not raise taxes. So he'll completely turn the issue around and try to maintain that he was out there trying to protect everyone's tax rates from being extended. That would be a little bit too shameless even for him, but I wouldn't put it past him if the numbers aren't looking good.
No, he'll say, I lowered taxes. I invaded Libya. I froze government salaries. Republicans vote for me. Then Republicans will say, no, we need to elect a Republican who will freeze government salaries, use military force, be willing to send forces into Pakistan, and sign debt deals and refuse to raise taxes.
Yes. And we wouldn't be a complete wrap-up of the major events of the early part of this week without a little visit with our old friend Harry Reid, the Senate Majority Leader, who just prior to the final debt ceiling vote, just after noon Eastern time on Tuesday, talked about how, you know, before we go home for recess, there's some nominations we need to deal with. We need to clear up this FAA thing. And then he's like, on second thought, I think this really needs to be the last vote that we do. And here's why.
I am home in Nevada that I haven't seen in months. My pomegranate trees are, I'm told, blossoming and got some pomegranates on them. I have some fig trees and roses and stuff that I just haven't seen.
Jim, I'm not sure whether this is a guy who should be as far away as possible from the levers of power in Washington or just another well-done Nevada. This is just another weird tangent from Harry Reid, who's probably a little bit short on sleep at that point, but still you'd expect a little more coherence than that.
My pomegranates, my figs. You know, it's enough to make a cowboy write a poem, Greg. We usually like to say, way to go, Nevada, but there's something kind of endearing about this guy. You know, but this, you know, he misses his home, he misses his garden. I'm picturing a Godfather scene here, kind of spraying with the bugs and stuff. The only other thing I'd observe is, you know, pity poor Harry Reid. He's had to get by living in the Ritz-Carlton in the middle of Washington. You know, that's where he has his Washington residence there. So the poor guy, he misses his plants. Look, you know, we did our very best to give Harry Reid more time to spend with the figs and the pomegranates and all that stuff. But no, he had to run negative attack ads against Sharon Engel. And so now he's got stuck with this job. Now we will continue to do our efforts. And maybe you could say Republicans will do everything they can to, I'd say, drive him crazy, but he already seems kind of crazy. So drive him crazier so that he says, you know what, I'm retiring. We'll have a special election for my seat and I'll just get to spend time in the garden. The Garden of Nevada Eden for Harry Reid.
That would be nice if Harry Reid would just decide to stay home, but unfortunately he's not going to because he's promised to raise taxes as part of this super committee, or the Uber committee, as I guess.
The Uber committee.
That's what we're now calling it. I think it was only Ron Paul to this point who's tried to question whether or not this is actually a good thing in line with the Constitution. But a little bit late for that now since we've already passed it and signed it into law. Pish posh on those small details. Jim, have a great day, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Looking forward to it, Greg.
Jim Garrity of NationalReview.com. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.